This is Sports Content Kings, talking to today's brightest minds in sports and entertainment.
Welcome to Sports Content Kings, brought to you by WSC Sports, a podcast dedicated to today's brightest minds in sports, figuring out the latest trends and technologies shaping the industry. I'm Aviv, one of the founders of WSC Sports and Chief Business Development Officer. Happy to be here together with my brother.
I'm Shaka, VP Business Development at WSC Sports, and we are the Arnon Brothers. And today we are joined by Anmol Malhotra. He's the head of sports partnerships at Snap Inc. or Snapchat. This has been a great conversation, and we thank Anmol for coming, and we hope you all enjoy. Aviv, another one. How's it going? How are you?
All good. Good to see you. It's been a while to do this, so I'm really glad to be back.
Very glad to have another awesome guest. We have Anmol Malhotra. How's it going?
Going great. Thanks for having me, guys. Much appreciated. So I've been working at Snapchat for the past 8.5 years. Over probably the past 6, it's been focusing on sports. And we say sports partnerships. We're talking about our relationship with leagues, broadcasters, rights holders, teams, athletes, tech companies like yourselves, and many others. And our goal is really to kind of partner with the best storytellers in the world and help them reach what we call the next generation of fans. So that's really been our objective since day one. It's obviously evolved pretty substantially. Talk like I think a lot about today. From my personal experience, I had kind of an interesting journey. I was a finance major in college, went to school at Notre Dame in Indiana, got a job at a big asset manager, BlackRock, wore a suit and tie every day, and worked on fixed income asset management, which I know sounds very different than what we're talking about now. But I want to mention it because I think for a lot of people, and I'm sure you guys have similar stories, it's never a linear path to where you end up. There's always a lot of interesting twists and turns. And for me, when I was about 5 years into my job at BlackRock, I was thinking about going to business school, studying for my GMAT. And when I was going through the process, I realized that I actually didn't want to do that. I was doing it because everyone else who works in finance for 4 or 5 years just goes to business school and then goes to a PE hedge fund shop. So I talked to one of my mentors and he said, you should maybe just try and go direct to another place and just kind of skip the B school thing if you can. And long story short, one of my current BlackRock colleagues at the time left to join Snap. We kept in touch. And at that time, which is about early, mid 2015, Snap was just starting to build out their revenue side of their business. And very luckily, I was a finance guy. So if you're a finance guy, you assume that you know numbers and revenue. So I was kind of the right place at the right time, met the current chief strategy officer who happened to be an ex-Credit Suisse person as well, and was looking to hire people who could help think about revenue strategy. So that was my first role. Joined in late 2015. I think my title was monetization strategy. And, you know, as you guys know well, when you join an early stage startup, you know, you do everything. We wear every hat: partnerships, sales, marketing, stocking the fridges with water bottles, et cetera. So it was a really fun ride. And one of the early things that we realized when I first joined, we didn't really have a sales team. So one of our strategies to make money was, let's go partner with big IP rights holders, broadcasters, leagues, et cetera, around the Super Bowl, the NBA Finals, Coachella, other festivals, the Oscars, et cetera, create content with these folks, and then allow them to sell on Snap. And we were really lucky because at that time, we had two trends that were kind of in our favor. You know, one, and this is again, I think mid-late 2015, TV viewership was obviously evolving and going down. And then the average age of that viewer was going up. So two bad trends for folks that whose business was at that time, you know, primarily heavily favored on TV advertising. So we could solve both of those problems and give them kind of a more shiny, younger audience to sell against. So we did that for probably 6 to 8 months. Then we built out our sales team and decided to negotiate all those rights back so that we could sell and kind of control our inventory. And that was a fun conversation with all these folks. And during that time period, I switched from, you know, doing more sales strategy to more business development and partnerships, and been doing that ever since.
So for you as a career path from finance, you moved from doing finance to going to festivals and super sports events. Like that was the transition.
Yeah, I always say I don't think I can ever wear a suit and tie to work again in my life and think about the hot summers in New York City, going on the subway, and by the time you got to the office, you're dripping in sweat. But yeah, it was definitely a big switch. The thing I always say, though, is that, and it's going to sound strange, but when I joined BlackRock, it was 2011 after I graduated college. And at that time, interest rates were really low, and we were managing money for fixed income, for organizations that were primarily focused on fixed income, think banks, insurance companies, et cetera, who are generally speaking, think insurance companies, very risk averse. So in a low interest rate environment, they actually had to find more ways to drive alpha. So they were really for the first time trying to do more risky investments to drive up their ROI. So we were talking to them about, you know, stuff they never talked about. They were always in treasuries and very low risk opportunities. And it was an inflection point in the industry at that time. So we kind of had to bring them a new solution. And I bring this up because when I joined Snap, it's obviously a different language, different problem, but it's the same idea, right? The broadcasters, leagues, rights holders were in a time of inflection point as well, where their core business was changing. The linear advertising model was evolving. Consumption for users was changing drastically. They also had to come up and think outside the box. So again, sounds strange, but there's actually a lot of synergies between what my experience was in finance and then coming to Snap. Because at the end of the day, we're solving problems for partners that we're working for, and we're trying to find solutions. And I also think, candidly, people always ask me like, oh man, do you wish you went straight to sports and Snap and tech out of school? And I would say, hell no. I learned so much from working at a big organization. You know, when I was at BlackRock, it was, 10, 12,000 people, a well-oiled machine. And you learn so much about scale and operations and how to build a business, really, because that's, a financial company that manages trillions in assets, knows what they're doing. So coming to Snap, which at the time was an early stage startup, right? I think I was like employee like 250 maybe when I joined. The exact opposite. We were just building it. Everything was in Google Sheets. I can't believe that from where I came, but it was a really good experience for me to take those learnings from a big organization and apply them to a company that was trying to grow in that way. So I always say like it was the, when you leave somewhere, you learn, you realize how much you learned after the fact sometimes. And when I walked into the Snapchat office in Venice, I was so glad I had those 5 years of experience in finance and at BlackRock, because I could apply a ton of it to my new role here.
All right. Interesting. So I think you mentioned that in the first couple of years, it was generally Snap, and then it transitioned to be a sports-centered role. Did I hear that right?
Think of it as all partnerships. And really, the idea was we need to get inventory in our platform that, we can ultimately monetize. So we were just trying to give deals with anybody who wanted to kind of explore in our platform. And I think our bar was really simple, right? If you understood the value prop and you're willing to work with us, we wanted to work with you. And I think you guys have this experience as well. It's funny now, like every conversation or every call we had back then was like such a gift. And it was like, oh man, these guys want to talk to us. This is unbelievable. And now we got to say no to a bunch of people because we want to pick the right partners and make sure they're succeeding. But back then it was like, hey, anyone who wants to be on the platform, like we want to have this conversation at least and see how we can work together. So it's always funny to see how that evolves, but
yeah, that flip.
It flips. Yeah. Once you get bigger and then, you get a lot more inbound. Whereas when we were doing it back then, it was a lot of cold emails, a lot of cold LinkedIn messages, a lot of cold messages across social to say, hey, have you heard of us on Snap? And if you guys remember, like we were not known as a content business in 2015, right? So when we went to people, they were very confused because they were just knowing us as an ephemeral messaging app. And then they had no idea that we actually were doing content partnerships. So a lot of our early conversations and outreach was actually pure education and walking them through why they should work with us and what the value prop was. And again, we were really lucky that we could solve those two problems of providing them with a younger audience that's really hard to reach during a time period where their audience are becoming fragmented. So it was a really, really fun, crazy time when we started it. And yeah, to your question, like we were talking to everyone across, all verticals, sports, music, entertainment, fashion, and then not probably 6-8 months in when we sort of figured out some of our strategies we hired a bunch of sellers. We could start focusing more on BD and then connecting our sales team to sell against it. We started verticalizing. And I very fortunately was given sports. And candidly, my boss at the time could have said anything. I would have been like, okay. And I happen to get sports.
can relate to a lot of your stories of an early stage company and doing everything and how you've grown. And actually, funny story, like you mentioned the office in Venice. So I think it was 2016 or something. We were starting to come around. We started working with some of our partners in LA back then. And coming to see you guys at Snap in the early days of the media and sports partnerships that you had. And I kept meeting. You were saying you were 8.5 years at Snap. In the beginning, I started to meet people at Snapchat. They were all, they seemed to be very young and ambitious and pushing. But then you asked them, how long have you been around? And they were like 2 months in, you know, like it was all, everybody was just starting. and that was like almost, I didn't know anybody in Snap back then that, and I met quite a few people that was more than 6 months in, you know, everybody was just hired and like going to conquer the world. So, I mean, so now 8.5 years in and you're like leading the sports vertical, I guess this is a much more mature, like, you know what you guys are up to, what your place is in the world. And I guess it's ever evolving since, because the industry has been ever evolving. What's the difference since back then, or where are you guys today?
I'd say the biggest difference is, you know, when we first started out, and like you said, you can relate to this, it's a lot of testing and learning, right? So I think the fun and scary part of the early days is that there was no blueprint. So what social was for the leagues, the broadcasters, like, this is a brand new thing. When we first started doing this, there weren't dedicated people focused on social at any of these places. We were trying to find the people that would be willing to listen to folks like us, but there wasn't a team doing that. Now at all these places, they have dedicated digital strategists and teams that are pretty big, because they realize that their fans are now everywhere, right? And you have to be where your fans are. And the idea of a young person sitting and watching a 3-4 hour game on their couch is just accepted today as not a reality. Whereas back then, you get a lot of strong responses as to this is what it is, this is what it's going to be. And I think today, like, the world has come forward to realize, okay, that screen in your pocket has a lot of effect on your consumption and your creation and your shareability. And then I think just the way fandom has evolved, right? I grew up outside of New York in Northern New Jersey. I grew up a Yankees, Knicks, Rangers, Giants fan, you know, New York all the way. I'll root for my teams no matter how bad they are and who's on them, because I'm loyal to the teams that I follow, I grew up watching. I think for young people today, they follow the players a lot more. They follow individuals. They care where they get traded, who they're dating, what they're wearing, how they're working out, who their families are. And a lot of it is off the court and off the field, right? So
you never knew what your star players are doing over the week between one game to another. You never knew what they're doing.
Exactly. You never had any idea. And now with social media and with digital platforms, you can see their whole lives every minute outside the game, which is super rare. So I think that's really, really affected, you know, our whole space. I think the second thing too is when you think about, and you know, the smartphones and having a bunch of apps, like the way I describe it is when we all were growing up, right? I remember coming home and wanting to finish my homework or my practice of us playing sports and capture this 6 o'clock Sports Center show. And that's where I get my highlights. And all my sports consumption came from there, right? Today you get that throughout the whole day. But I think more importantly, you know, our version, we had the remote control and we could pick the channels we were watching on our TV set when we were all growing up. That version for young people today is their phone and their channels are their apps, right? So they at any moment can jump in different apps. They can jump into different content formats, et cetera. So their optionality is greater than ever before and it's unlimited. Whereas we had a finite kind of period. And there is, you know, we probably know the idea of appointment viewing when you used to watch a TV show back in the day. I think the only appointment viewing that exists today now is sports, candidly, because you still want to watch it live and everything else is now on demand. So I think that all has also affected just overall consumption and how people think about content generally. And then sports specifically, you know, it's really led, I think about the NBA, who's obviously a partner of both of ours. You could argue that the offseason has become just as exciting as the regular season sometimes, right? Because where are people getting traded? What are they doing? It's become a 12-month leak. And that's because of digital platforms and being able to now see what's happening off the court. So I think there's a lot of benefits to that. And obviously platforms like ourselves and yours have built a lot of business around it. I think the challenge that everyone's seeing now is just bifurcation and attention span and time, right? So I think the NFL has the greatest strength in the world of scarcity, where they only have a handful of games per week and they pretty much own Sundays in the US, whereas other leagues are now challenged because a lot of points of their season are not as valuable to the young person. They'll say, oh, this is, I don't need to pay attention to this now because I'll just wait to the playoffs or when the games become more important. So I think there's obviously trade-offs to all of this and everyone's working through it. You've seen some cool innovations in-season tournament for the NBA this year, sort of mimicking some of the Champions League style to try and bring some more heightened excitement, you know, at a point of the season where probably has less more recently. You've obviously seen the NFL find more tent poles to bring up, right? Like, we'll probably remember how the draft used to be kind of this relatively simple thing in Radio City Music Hall in New York City, and now it's become this traveling show at different cities and stadiums that hundreds of thousands of people go to. They created that temple, right? The combine's now become a big thing. Thursday Night Football didn't exist, you know, 15 years ago. So I think, you know, these sorts of things are really smart ways to kind of develop more touch points with their fans. And then again, like to your earlier question, they've embraced platforms like Snap and others because they realize that that's where their fans are every day, talking to their friends and family.
Another point that you were saying about the athletes being like, you follow your athlete around the day and where they are, and people actually are fans of the athletes as much as they are of the team or the league, or even more so. I think every athlete today is almost, in some cases, like a media channel of itself, right? And specifically on Snap or on platforms like that, like, people follow sometimes the athlete more than they would be watching the whole sports channel. I mean, that's definitely a behavioral change, but it's how media has evolved, and sports specifically, I think, is very particular in this. Like, it's a big part of following a sport or a season or even being a fan, right? So so you guys are driving a lot of that type of engagement.
So as you said, you made a lot of good points about the evolution of the fan. And how now they have more choice. It used to be the remote control, and now you have more choice. And it was even more severe than that, because if you're an avid tennis fan or lacrosse fan, maybe you have to wait in SportsCenter for 20 something minutes. Maybe they'll show, you know, portions of the sport you like, and you don't know. I mean, you basically have to invest time in things that you're maybe not that excited about in order to get to what you in the hopes of getting what you're excited about, especially if you're a fan of a small team or a sport that is not on the main stage. And now you can not only do you have more choice, you have full control of what you watch and when, and not to quote unquote waste your time on other stuff. So to bring all that together and to tie it back to what you do, how do you guys at Snapchat leverage the athlete stardom and the fact that the athlete is the media company now, right? The media entity, and the fans can find them directly and have that direct connection. What do you guys do over there to, follow those trends or, to lead those trends, because you're at the forefront of this?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I agree, obviously, with everything you guys said. I think, and I'd add one point as well and tie it to this piece. I think about the microphone, right? So before social media, before digital platforms, before folks like Snap and others, their microphone was held by the broadcaster, by the interviewer, by the reporter. So it, in theory, was controlled by distribution arm that was going to then talk about it on a SportsCenter or on a news show, whatever it might be. Now their microphone is the individual, right? And they actually control their audience because of their followings across social. So I think that's the biggest change. And to you guys' point, now they're their own media companies because now they can control directly. And you've seen this with, I think in the past year, we've had more athlete-focused podcasts than probably ever. And it's so unique when you hear, I was just listening to the most recent one with LeBron and JJ Redick, and they're talking about X's and O's of a game. And it's so unique hearing players' perspectives on strategy. Because usually you hear, historically you hear it from analysts and pundits who either retired or, never played in the game, which is fine. but now you're getting it from, you know, one of the greatest players of all time and, you know, an incredible player as well, and now turned media person in JJ Redick. So I think we're seeing this whole new world of doors open for different ways to kind of talk about these things. To your question about how we do it with athletes, I think where we're unique is, and piggybacking a point from earlier, you know, we are the young slice of the pie, right? You know, 90% of our audience is under the age of 25. We really want to drive that next generation of fans. When I think about it, you know, again, using me as an example, I'm a hardcore male sports fan. I'm going to watch my teams and my favorite stuff across every platform. I'm easy. You know, we're not trying to attract me. We're trying to attract the casual fan, the person who doesn't know who LeBron James is, the person who doesn't know who Serena Williams is, the person who doesn't know that March Madness is happening right now. How do we capture that person's attention? How do we pique their curiosity, right? And I think we do it, to your question, Chaka, around actually providing a lot of stuff around a game. You know, the pregame, the postgame, the fans, the locker room, the tailgates for an NFL game, right? I think those things are actually have much a wider net and are more relatable to a lot of people, as opposed to the hardcore fan who loves seeing the dunks and the touchdowns and the goals and the highlights, right? Now, you have to obviously keep the hardcore fan satisfied because that person is spending a lot of time and they're consuming a ton, but you also have to bring in that casual fan. I think this is the area where we've had a lot of success in doing all these partnerships, is that we can go to the NFL, the NBA, ESPN, FIFA, the IOC, NBC, et cetera, and say, hey, we can help capture that casual fan that right now you're not hitting across any of your properties. And then over time, you can turn them into a hardcore fan. And that's, I think, the beauty of when you want to capture a young audience, and this is kind of where we sit in the ecosystem, right? And we all know this, like when you're exposed to a league, a brand, a team, a player at a young age, that sticks with you for a long time, right? So this is why the audience that we have is so coveted, and why people have always, it's the hardest to reach, but also the, you know, one of the shiniest ones to get. And that's really how we do it, right? So we're trying to bring a holistic 360 experience to kind of pique that curiosity of those fans. And I think it's really, really important. I think when we first started doing this, you know, candidly in 2015, we made the mistake of just covering the game, right? So we'd cover Giants, Packers in the NFL, or Knicks, Lakers. And if you're just covering the game, you know, you're going to get those two teams' fan bases. And unless it's an incredible game, you're probably not getting too many folks beyond that. And again, we're really open about this. As you guys know better than anybody, you can watch a highlight in 20 different places today, right? If you, after the March Madness games end tonight, you can find highlights in a ton of spots. We're never going to win by just having that as an asset, right? That's a huge foundation of ours for sure, like everybody, but we have to build on top of it. So us bringing the experience of everything else around it, and also kind of the feeling of being there. You know, when you watch, when we first started doing this stuff, we used to curate what we called live stories, our stories, where we geofence a stadium. And you guys might remember, you could, when you post it on Snap, you actually could post to that Snapchat story. And then we would curate, we'd get, you know, 5, 10, 20,000 snaps per game, and then curate the best 30 or 40. What was really fun about it is that if you watch those stories, you know, it was a really cool way to feel like you're actually at the game. We always said the best way to experience a live sporting event is to buy a ticket and go. The next best way is to kind of watch it on our platform, because we love that 360 experience. We love the first row snap. We equally love the last row snap, right? And I think that's where, you know, we've sat in the ecosystem, and you know, most hardcore sports fans actually never get a chance to go see their favorite team play in person, right? So bringing that experience on a platform like ours has really been sort of our lane. And then, you know, one thing we haven't talked about yet today, you guys know well, is like, we've been leaning on content. We've expanded a ton beyond content, right? So Snapchat lenses, augmented reality. I think COVID was very interesting for us because, you know, during a time period where the world shut down, sports is such a communal experience. And whether you're going to a game or going to the bar to watch with your friends, you're always generally with some people when you're watching. And that was sort of taken away for a little bit of time. We'd use our amazing Snap AR tech to bring people that same experience through technology. So I'll give you a couple examples. If you guys are golf fans, we have an awesome relationship with Augusta National around the Masters. For the first time that fall, November of 2020, patrons were not allowed to attend Augusta National for the Masters for the first time ever, which is crazy. And we created this really cool AR experience where you could take your phone out, take your Snapchat camera out, and you could recognize any Masters logo. So on a shirt, on a hat, on a mug, on a poster, Snapchat camera recognize it, taking what we call a portal lens, where now you'd be driving down Magnolia Lane and going up to kind of the clubhouse, which is really cool. So we brought that experience of being there to yourself in person, which is amazing. When NBA returned for, I think it was July that year, they had that bubble in Orlando. We created this really cool lens again, where took your Snapchat camera out, you're sitting in your living room, and you point it to the ground. We have this technology called ground segmentation. It recognizes the ground and then recreates the court from the bubble. So you're actually sitting in the court in your living room. So these are things that we've also added to our arsenal. And again, when you think about young people, we think about fandom, we think about consumption and creation, you know, having technology amplify what you're doing. We've always been really pro AR, augmenting your current experience with your friends and family. It really, really helps us hit our goal of reaching those next generation of fans.
You know, what you mentioned before about that 360 degree experience, people who listen to this and you probably know that WSC, we had over a decade of automating content in the game, doing the highlights, identifying everything that's happening, and then creating limitless amount of narratives and stories through highlights with our clients and with our partners. And we just developed and released a new capability and a new new value proposition, where we actually call it Around the Game. We didn't plan this in advance. So that's how you called it. Actually taking all that content from all those different sources, whether it's fans that are uploading, whether it's the locker room cameras, interviews, the studio shows, everything, to tell that 360 degree story or various stories around the game. So that's actually something that we have just started to do, and we really see and believe that that's the way to experience sports today, because as you said, it's not just what's going on the court or on the field. That's just maybe the peak of the story, but the story began a lot before that and will continue after that.
So there's a few big events this year. So what's in the store for Snap? There's
a huge Super Bowl just happened. There's Olympics in the summer, right? Now March Madness. What are you doing? What are you planning for these big events?
Yeah, so we really talked about the Super Bowl. I think, as you guys know, it being in Vegas kind of added an element to it that we haven't seen in a long time. Just the excitement. You know, I think Vegas has sort of become the unofficial capital of the sports universe these past few years. Maybe that and the Middle East kind of tied for 1A and 1B. So it was really exciting for us. We have a huge relationship with the NFL. You know, we're in our ninth year of partnership, which is pretty remarkable. Coming from what we talked about back in 2015, it seemed almost impossible in our first conversation. And now we're incredible partners and I've been working there for a long time. So we had content, you know, every day leading up to the big game. I think we all benefited from a lot of the stuff happening off the field with some famous musical artists and Travis Kelce, which was nice. So that was really cool. And we saw a lot of uptick in some of our content around that. And also, I feel like the NFL has to be scripted because the game was just perfect in terms of every way and going to overtime and being game-winning touchdown. And, you know, one thing we did for the first time ever, we have really cool technology in a stadium we call Camera Kit Live. And think of it as the Kiss Cam that we've turned into the Snapchat Cam. You guys might have seen this if you've been to any games at SoFi or Barclays, a couple of other stadiums recently. We essentially take our lens technology, integrate it with the stadium video board, and then the in-game presentation team can use it throughout the game to enhance kind of the fan experience. So during the Super Bowl for the first time ever, we had a custom Vegas helmet lens, and during a few timeouts they placed those lenses on fans in the stadium. And it's a really cool experience because I think it's always fun when you get your face on the Jumbotron anytime just by itself, but now we can add, you know, really fun Snap overlay of it. That was a really big moment for us for the Super Bowl this year. But now we're expanding it a ton. We did an NBA All-Star the week after that. You might have seen that, Aviv, when you were there, which is really fun. So that was great. And then we always have our amazing augmented reality collaboration with the league, all of our content initiatives as well. So that was probably, it's always kind of our barometer of the beginning of the year with the, you know, biggest sports event that we cover in February. And yeah, you mentioned, Chuck, a bunch of other big ones coming, the Euros in Germany and Paris Olympics this summer. I think, you know, Paris is very unique for us. When we started doing this, if you think about the Olympics that we've covered since I've been at Snap, Brazil and Rio 2016, too early for us to really do anything big, and just a hard place for us to do partnerships and deals, just given we didn't have any presence there. Pyeongchang, again, harder place for us. Tokyo would have been amazing, but unfortunately COVID, so no fans. And then Beijing, we're obviously not even allowed in China as an app. So this is really the first Olympics for us that has been in a market that we're in. We have a huge presence there. It's one of our most strong regions in Europe. So it's really, really exciting. I think, you know, not just for us, but for everybody, it being in Paris, it feels like it's the first time that it's in a city like this since maybe London in 2012, which is really, really exciting. So we're doing a whole lot with the IOC, a lot of really fun AR collaborations there, as you guys will see in the coming weeks and months, a lot with major broadcasters. Of course, NBC in the US is one of our longstanding relationships, which should be really cool. You know, we're doing a ton of content with them. For the first time, we're going to send creators as part of our partnership with NBC, which is fun. And it goes back to, like, you know, what you guys were saying about how you evolve over time. I think we all know the creator system has now exploded over the past year or two. And providing their perspectives, exactly what you guys said before, is another angle into kind of reaching another subset of potential fans, right? When you can get their creators to kind of open their audiences now and expose them to a fun sporting event through their lens, which is really fun. So we're doing a bunch of that, which is great. And then, you know, a ton of coverage over our markets in Europe and beyond through partnerships with all the broadcasters, kind of the main key regions. So we're really excited about that. And, you know, I think, again, the Olympics is, you know, you could probably put the Olympics and World Cup on the same level of the biggest global sports, cultural, music event that happens. And I think what's really fun for us is when we do partnerships around something like that, we can really unlock, and it's the only time you can really do it, all of our key pillars globally, right? So when we think about Snap and what we mentioned earlier, and our goal with sports was driving this 360 experience, there's obviously the content piece. There's now the technology piece, augmented reality. There's obviously the communication piece. How can we make it easy for fans to talk to their friends? There's the product integration piece. So I mentioned that Kiss Cam technology, we're going to bring that as well to a bunch of different places. And then there's, of course, just providing a unique lens of coverage, right? And so this is one of those events where we can do all of the above. And it's not just one market. It's not just one sport. It's all the sports and it's all the markets. And it's over 17 days. It's really fun. So it's kind of having like 17 straight Super Bowls, right?
Do you see this as a sort of strategy where you throw everything at it and see what sticks? Or are you really handpicking, okay, only the very top of the list things that we think that will work, we'll do that? How do you think about that?
Yeah, I'd say in 2015, we definitely, our strategy was primarily throw paint at the wall and see what sticks because we didn't really know yet. Now, you know, luckily we've had a bunch under our belts, and you think about our big initiatives. We've done a bunch of Olympics with the NBC. We've done a bunch of tent poles, you know, mentioned the Super Bowl, NBA Finals, World Cups. So we have a really good sense of what works. I think with the fun part about this, and you guys mentioned this at the beginning, the world adapts really quickly. You know, given our audience is young, their consumption habits change, and what they want or like or spend time with changes. So it's very important for us to evolve and adapt as well. And I think you guys know this too, like the platforms, the initiatives, the projects, the tasks, the partners that do well is when you can adapt and adjust accordingly as the landscape continues to shift. I think the ones that fail, and we've seen a lot of this, you know, historically in just traditional media stuff, if you don't, then you fall behind, right? And I think we're in the same boat, candidly. You know, even though we are, of course, leaning in on the digital side, and that's sort of the premise of our platform, there's still a lot of things that evolve and change for us. And if we have the same Olympic plan for Paris as we did for Tokyo or Beijing, then something's gone wrong, right? The creator piece, I think, is a great example where, you know, that, call it 2-3 years ago, you know, the way we're talking about it today has changed substantially, I think, for everybody. And I know we've obviously talked about this as well for our stuff, but, you know, that's a whole new avenue of engagement, of growth, of content, of potential brand integrations now that, you know, really wasn't even talked about not too long ago. So we're always kind of on the cutting edge. I think it's like probably the best part of working at a company like Snap. And I think the most exciting part, there's always something to kind of build upon. And every day, week, month, year, you know, we're evolving based upon where we're seeing some of these habits change and what's best for our user base and how we can grow and continue to provide value.
Before we wrap this up, I wanted to call out the creators mentioned here. Like, you know, we work with the 450 rights owners globally now across multiple sports, and we have a lot of partners that are sitting on a massive archive of content that they're trying to rekindle. You know, you want to get it out to their fans, and they want to use it and get the excitement about the storylines and the different their history. So, and a lot of sports content now on social media has been driven by creators telling the stories, their perspectives, their analysis, their view, or adding a flavor to the storytelling, like doing it like you mentioned, like from their perspective. But sometimes it's just great editors that are doing something very unique. Sometimes it's a whole analysis or a specific perspective of an influencer. So what we did is we have some partners that are looking for ways to distribute, to find more fans, to create, get more views to their content, even better monetize. So we help them also match them up with creators that are reusing their content, distributing it, putting it on social media on different channels. We have done this also together with you on with some of our partners in specific sports channels that were created on Snap with creators making that unique content, helping to get to new fans and also monetize. So it also, something else I wanted to talk to you about is like everything we talked about, the consumer experience and how you guys are driving all this change. But then from a business perspective, like you help also all those media partners monetize. It's a new channel, a new revenue stream. So like, can you help me bring that home? How does the business model work? That's what I also wanted to bring.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And I think to add on to kind of our first analogy of how we, you know, initially solved the consumption habits changing from traditional sitting on couch TV watchers and also the average age up, with us having a robust video consumption business and also the average age of our platform being much lower. Obviously, the second piece is driving revenue. So I think when we think about any of our partnerships, we want to do three things: incremental reach, incremental revenue, and drive relevance, right? So anytime we talk to anybody, those are our overall KPIs and pillars. And everything that we do, we talked about a bunch of stuff today, content, AR, product, et cetera. We want it to ladder up to one of those three pillars. Ideally, we have all three. And we know, you know, and you guys are a partner of ours, and we have many other partners. If we can't consistently drive multiple of those buckets, then we're never going to have a long-term strategic relationship. So like, we understand that ask from our partners, we understand the pressure on their side. And also, like, candidly, you need to run your business too. So if you're spending time and resources on our side and we can't drive you the revenue piece to your point of view, then, you know, over time, we're obviously not going to have a growing and substantial relationship. So the way we're very simple in the way that we can monetize from a content standpoint. You know, if you watch content on Snap, you are served interstitial ads. We call them commercials in our shows. Very, very uncreative, but you know, same idea around you're watching tonight you'll watch the March Madness content we have with Turner, and you'll see ads running every four or five snaps, let's say. And then we split revenue on that ad inventory. And I think, again, the same value prop that I have given our partners and our team has given our partners from a partnership standpoint is a very similar prop that our sales team gives to brands. So if you're talking to Coke or Nike or Gatorade, same idea. You have all this legacy money tied to a lot of traditional media stuff, but you're trying to reach new fans. You're trying to reach new people, younger people, same idea, expose their brand to young people, which is why it's really important to be on Snapchat, right? So they can now take that contextual creative and now, you know, what they might have had exist previously on for a linear commercial, and actually have it run in on a platform like Snap and many others, where they're accomplishing their goals as well of driving awareness, driving sort of direct response, downloading an app, buying a ticket, going to a game, whatever it might be, selling merch, and that's how we kind of run our business. So I think it's really important for us, as you mentioned, Aviv, like when we succeed on the partnership side and create, you know, fruitful relationships, it builds more inventory for our sales team to then sell and bring to brands. And then the success that we have of people watching this content and engaging in it leads to obviously more eyeballs and time spent on all the ads inventory. The other piece too is, you know, outside of content, you can also buy the lenses I mentioned. So you guys have probably seen some of our amazing AR tech from a brand standpoint as well. And again, we think if when done right, the creative, the ad buy can actually enhance the experience. I'll give you one of my favorite examples. And this is just goes back to when we first started doing this, 2016, the Gatorade dunk lens. We sold a Gatorade dunk lens, and you know, any sports fan knows, so the Super Bowl winning quarterback gets a Gatorade dunk over his head by his players right before they win the game. We created that iconic moment on Snap by creating that AR experience where you can get actually dunked on as well. So a really fun way to tie a moment that everybody knows as a fan through an ad advertising creative on for using AR through one of our biggest partners. So we love stuff like that. And I think from a brand standpoint, you know, it's an obvious additional complementary way to drive more people to be exposed to their brand. And the example I gave you guys earlier with the in-stadium integration stuff, you know, a really fun one we did last December was with Disney and Avatar. So same sort of example where it's a kiss cam, but instead we sort of overlay lenses on people's faces. Disney ran the Avatar 2 trailer at SoFi Stadium, and they run that, you know, that's their standard ad buy, right? They run trailers all the time. And what they added this time, which really added to this ad experience, is when the trailer finished, we actually created a custom Avatar lens with them that could turn fans into Navi. So the second the trailer finished, I'll show you guys the clip and you can take a look, because I know it feels a little bit less when I'm describing it, but the fans in the stands now turn into actual Navi. So a really cool way to tie in our technology from Snap with a brand that actually enhanced the experience for our user base, both on the app and in person.
Cool stuff. I think, with everything you're describing, I think the Olympics is probably going to be a very interesting time to follow what you guys do and what creators do on your platform. It's going to be, I think, a lot of new things and a lot of creativeness is going to be going to have a platform. So amazing stuff. Aviv, anything you wanted to add there?
Just wanted to say thank you, Amal. Every topic or everything we just like, small question, you have so much to tell us and there's a lot to learn. So I'm sure everybody would find it interesting. But when we have time, I'd love to continue having this conversation. So thank you so much.
Definitely. No, thanks for having me. This was really fun. I appreciate you guys thinking of me.
All right, Aviv, that was great. Anmol was a fountain of information and a lot of thoughts and a lot of experience in the industry. It's great. And also, joking aside, there's a lot of follow-ups we need to do with them, because I think we can do more exciting things together. What we've done is just the tip of the iceberg with them.
A lot of great stuff. I think it is like targeting young audience and younger fans. This is what every sports property is trying to get. Like when you get a new fan early and starting to get them engaged, that's how you really build the future of your sports, of your brand. So I think we heard a lot of interesting insights on how that is done. And I think this could have gone easily for another hour. There was so much to hear and to learn from Anmol. So I think it's been great.
All right. Till next time.
See you.
Thanks to all of you for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please rate us and leave a review or share the show with a friend. And if you haven't subscribed yet, please do so now so that you never miss a new episode. We're your hosts. I'm Shaka.
And I'm Aviv. We are the Arnon Brothers, and this has been Sports Content Kings by WSC Sports. Thank you all for joining, and looking forward to see you here again.